Welcome to the Roma Press Podcast with Jun Solano and Andy Mattioli.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is another Roma Press Podcast. We hope you are doing well as we get to do the requiem for the Azzurri in the Euro competition. We will get to that in a moment, though, but of course, as always, thank you to all of our wonderful patrons. If you would like to join, patreon.com/RomaPress, early access to episodes, other things as well. I did an update on Rick Karsdorp recently. And you also get to join the group chat where you can overreact about every single transfer rumor that comes out with everybody else, with all the other sycophants, to simply remind yourself that you are not the only one enveloped and cursed by watching and having to support this club every single day of your life. You can speak about all of the other troubles that the club is bringing to you, even when the season is not going on. Patreon.com/RomaPress, and then at IS Roma Press on all of the social medias, YouTube, like, subscribe, do that bell thing so you can get the reminders. I don't know if people actually do that. Do you do that, Andy? I think
there are people who are actually invested in the subscribing act of it.
Okay, well, I take that back then. So subscribe and press that bell thing.
Exactly.
I hear everybody do it on every single YouTube
video. Especially if you are here because of the Friedkins, if you're an Everton fan.
Yes.
We got a lot of those. Surprisingly, our last episode was the most watched episode in the channel's history.
It just goes in our very short history. I think we are going on 9 months now, almost.
Almost a year. And that video just blew up for whatever reason.
2023 is when we decided to do a YouTube, started doing the podcast on a video version of it. Maybe we will, we're still doing like VHS cassette tapes. Maybe we'll move to DVD soon. Who knows? That's how behind we are. But no, thank you to everyone. First off, it just goes to show you, power of that Premier League, huh? Incredible.
That's the prestige, man. Even a channel as miserable as ours can get its spotlight for just 5 minutes, you know? So we got to be thankful even for those moments.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We are very grateful. As I mentioned before, we do appreciate all of the support we have gotten. It's been immense. Before we get into all of the Italian national team related items, I just have to do a very quick rant, and I'm going to have to maintain my composure here because, as you know, Andy, last week, Roma, they met with the mayor of Rome to discuss the ongoing 20 years long battle that is known as the Stadio della Roma. Okay. And listen, this has been something that at first I was heavily invested. I mean, I was messaging with James Palotta, some of his guys, during these meetings about the Stadio della Roma, giving live updates,
Is it still called Stadio della Roma? I don't think so.
I don't know. Whatever it is, being this intrepid journalist, messaging sources, knowing how all of these meetings went between the city and the club, and trying to give like live updates. Oh, the club, where they're making progress for the Stadio della Roma. It is happening. It is happening. It is happening. And after 5 years, it dissipated. And now on year 29 of this storyline, the wind not only has been taken out of my sail, the boat crashed into rocks and is rotting, okay, at the bottom of the sea. It is difficult for me to get reinvested after having to be just dragged along and absolutely raked over the burning coals from how many different bureaucratic arms in this country, where we've got the actual government with his hand in it. If we want to talk about some of the other some of the other groups. As we remember, there were some environmental groups.
Kodakons. The consumer protective program. I don't know what the hell that was. They're still operative. They're like the
yes,
PTA.
I'm fairly certain they still have me blocked on Twitter because I called them in a country where
I'm also blocked. Yeah.
Yes, where I believe my exact tweet was, you know, in a country where there are groups and agencies renowned for their uselessness, to stand above and stick out for being more and considerably more just pathetic and a waste of time than the rest. You really have to stick out, and that's what they did. But anyway, that's my long way of saying this has been the longest story that is really a non-story for this long, because the fact of the matter is not a shovel has not been put into the ground. A brick has not been laid.
Although the official end date for this project is still this godforsaken 100th anniversary, right? The centenary of the club, 2027. That's when the stadium is supposed to open. I don't see how that is happening. And whenever you get these updates, it's always been miserable. You never know. You always get these same three people talking. You always see the same photos of the same spokesperson for the mayor's office or the mayor himself always saying the same things. You know, the project is ongoing. Now it's up to the club, and now this and now that. But concrete action? No. So as you were saying before, there's the only reports that we get so far is the club have met with the mayor. That's as far as we can go.
Okay, so they meet last week. And anytime this sort of stuff happens, the city loves to, they like to pat themselves on the back. When there is anything in regards to even the most, and I wouldn't even consider this progress, but any updates in regards to the Stadio della Roma, when they meet with the club, the city wants to ensure that everybody knows, that every single media outlet is aware, and that all of the details are neatly outlined for every single person to read. So I have been very outspoken about just bureaucracy in this country. And please stick with me. This is going to be very short. Don't hang up just yet on the video, okay? I promise I'm going to keep this short. Listen, in this country, nothing gets done for a football club to get a stadium done, except if if you are Juve and just suddenly you are able to get the approval, the designs, everything done, completed in just a few short years. Funny how that works. But outside of that, you have to just go through every single possible hurdle that you can't even foresee as a potential, potential trip in the road. You know, like the most nonsensical things come out of nowhere from the most nonsensical groups. Okay, so fine, and that's why it is taking this long. But getting anything done in this country, it is nearly impossible. Okay, even for if you have traveled to this country, you don't even have to be Italian to understand this. Like if you come into the country, like just getting through the airports, you have to commit assault on people just to get out. If you've flown into Fiumicino, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So Roma. So fast forward to now, today. So last week, Roma, they'd meet with the city. And all of the Roma websites, including us, they write about it, okay? And you were the one who did this article. Now, like 2 hours after this article comes out, and this is something we are used to here, whether we get officials or executives from Roma, agents, people who are involved in the stories, people that you would think have far better things to do, people making millions, while you and I are sitting here on a YouTube on a weekend doing a YouTube podcast. Okay, got people making millions. Okay, after a long, hard day's work. Okay, they are making millions. They are for some reason reading our website, which in a way I suppose I am flattered. Okay, but I get an alert because when somebody submits a form to contact us, we get an alert and I open it and it was a mixture of wanting to scream and to cry because this came in at 8 p.m. in the evening. Okay. It is from the press officer for the mayor's office, like for the city of Rome, the head of media. And he writes to us saying there were some inaccuracies in the story. By the way, they didn't change the substance of the article. It was Roma met with the mayor's office and they talked about the stadium. Okay, fine. He took issue with one of the things written in the article. And he says, if you could kindly update it, we would greatly appreciate it.
He said it was a phone call.
Yes, he said it was a phone call.
A phone call between CEO Lina Soloco and the mayor. Although all the other Italian stories that reported on that just said there was a meeting between the two parties. And that small detail was the one that this press officer took issue with on a Monday evening at 8 o'clock, contacting us to request immediately to change the story.
A meeting can be over the phone. It can be face to face, but whatever. But this is where, Andy, I wanted to scream. I wanted to, this guy's like 60 to 70 years old too, by the way. You have nothing better. You want to know why nothing gets done in this country? Because you have press officers of one of the biggest, most influential, most popular cities in the world looking at RomaPress.net at 8 p.m. on a Monday. What are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
You're 65 years old. It's 8 p.m. It's a Monday. It's been 15 years with this stadium, man. Not a single hole has been dug. Shovel's not been put into the ground. You're on RomaPress.net at 8 p.m. on a Monday. And not only are you reading the story, you are going to our page to contact us and to send me an email. For something that changes nothing in regards to the store, that changes nothing. There was contact between the two sides. Great. Okay, fine.
Finito. That was it.
If you want, it just reinforces everything I ever say about the bureaucracy, about absolute, the useful idiots.
Now watch this segue. Speaking of useful idiots, Luciano Spalletti. And Gabriele Gravina, two men who just sat down for a press conference in light of Italy's elimination from the round of 16 against Switzerland, John, mind you, against Switzerland. I think, remember,
a Switzerland who dominated them, by the way. Let's
Switzerland
be very clear.
Who didn't allow Ran Italy a single them. Shot on goal. A Switzerland that seemed like a mixture between Manchester City and Pep Guardiola's Barcelona. This, for my money, is one of the lowest points that the Italian national team has granted us. And there's been a few low points, including two missed World Cup participations, right?
I mean, Ventura going on to Sky Sport and being interviewed as he gets onto the plane and they ask to him, are you going to step down? And he says, I need to
listen,
think about it.
Listen, Ventura, compared to what Luciano Spalletti showed during this tournament, in my opinion, Ventura didn't do even that bad, because given who Luciano Spalletti is and what he was coming off of,
wow. Well, that came out of nowhere.
We'll work with that. I think this was just the universe telling us to move on from stuff that doesn't directly concern Roma, but it does, because what the Italian national team showed was how the system in Italy, in Syria, works. And what happened to Italy is, I think, one of the many manifestations of why Italian clubs are good. And actually, in recent years, if you look at the UEFA rankings, they keep climbing. You know, the likes of Roma, Inter, they keep climbing. Napoli with Spalletti were playing some of the best football in Europe in that particular year. Milan have also been good. Juve are going to get back into the Champions League. And yet, something was so emblematic about this national team this year and how they were not a team. And for, I mean, the talent that was there was not even good enough to break through Switzerland, which doesn't mean that I really don't think that the here's the thing, the squad at Roberto Mancini's disposal when Italy won the Euro 2020 in 2021, I don't think was that much better than what we had tonight, last night, but it was much more cohesive group. It was much more reminiscent of that cohesion and sense of team spirit that we had at Euro 2016 when Antonio Conte led Italy with the likes of Parolo, Giaccherini, Pelé, and Simone Zaza and Eder. This year, Italy could have done a lot better if they had some humility. But as always with things in Italy, there's very little humility. So a guy like Spalletti wins a Scudetto, and all of a sudden, he's the new maestro, you know? Someone like Gabriele Gravina gets his hands on a coach of Spalletti's caliber, and all of a sudden, you know, he doesn't feel like there is anything wrong. So these two buffoons go on to speak to the media and say, there's nothing wrong. Yes, we've made mistakes, but we're not gonna resign. Without understanding that there's fundamentally something flawed within the system that produced such scarce talent. I mean, the talent is there in the youth teams for Italy are some of the best teams in Europe.
Yes.
What happens is that very often the clubs fail to give them value, first of all. Second of all, you have these youngsters who get, for some reason, get these 30 million euro price tags. Nobody ends up buying them. They end up in the gutters. Think about someone like Domenico Berardi. Now, that's just an example of a player who, when he was young, was considered to have enormous potential. But what did Sassuolo do? Sassuolo kept asking unbelievable figures for him. Unbelievable figures, you know, for a homegrown talent, just because of that, just because he was showing good things, scoring abilities, dribbling. A team that was fighting to avoid relegation was asking for millions and millions for a guy like Domenico Berardi. Think about Andrea Belotti. 7 years ago, 7 years ago, the guy was 23, and Torino were asking for 100 million for him, okay? Now, where is Belotti going to play next season? He's going to play at Como, okay? Because for years, he was stuck in a place that just didn't allow him to express himself. Why? Because they failed to nurture. So even with the little talent at their disposal, Italian clubs failed to cultivate that talent. What we saw in Italy, Switzerland, is that it's a lack of humility. It's players who feel too confident for the little that they've shown. Because with the exception of Barella with Inter this year, Di Marco with Inter this year, who else was coming off a really remarkable season in that starting 11? Fagioli, who got suspended for betting on games, you know? Who else? Darmian, who for some reason was again in the starting lineup. I mean, this guy was in the starting lineup in 2016. I don't think he's shown enough to be in the starting lineup 8 years later. What about the strikers? Do you know that, John, not a single one of our strikers for Italy scored a single goal during this tournament? Not a single goal from strikers in this tournament. The problem is you have guys like Gianluca Scamacca who are coming off a really good year with Atalanta, and you as Luciano Spalletti fail to utilize him at all. Gianluca Scamacca looked like Mattia Destro on a bad day. Not Mattia Destro on a good day, on a bad day. So the failure of this Italy team at this Euro was guaranteed. I felt it from the first game against Albania. These guys felt like they arrived somewhere. And
yeah.
And that is very emblematic of what you were saying about the Italian bureaucracy, about the Italian system, of these guys like Gabriele Gravina, who have failed to achieve anything. I mean, Gabriele Gravina has been at the helm of Fijici since Ventura, since Italy failed to qualify for the World Cup. He's been there.
He's 17 now? 70 years old?
He's old as hell. He's witnessed some of the greatest failure in the history of the Italian national team. Luciano Spalletti, with the choices that he made, even something as simple as calling up Fagioli, a guy who hasn't played a single game in 10 months and refusing to call up other players. I'm not saying, for example, that Manuel Locatelli is a better player than Fagioli, but Manuel Locatelli actually played football this season. Fagioli was sitting in a psychiatrist's office asking for meds against depression, okay? And that's not a burn on Fagioli. That's a burn on Spalletti for not reading the human relations that are involved, that are necessary for a tournament, because Spalletti, I think, got too comfortable with the idea that you have all the time in the world to improve a squad. Let's remind ourselves that it took him a first year with Napoli that was quite poor, given the expectations, to then be able to build on that. With the national team, you don't have that. National team, you have, what, maybe in total a month and a half of training with all the international breaks, that's about it. And then you have a month of tournament. So you probably coach for about 2.5 months in the year, if anything. So that's a failure. That's a failure to read that for a tournament, you need everybody to be on board. I never got the impression that these players were on board with each other. They deserve to go out. And there, it's very emblematic of a system that is flawed and that will be flawed if the people that are in charge of it do not realize their mistakes and actually accept defeat and step down.
Well, absolutely. And I have always maintained, when it comes to international football in general, when it comes to the manager, you need a very particular personality, in my opinion. One who is balanced, one who is steady, which are the exact opposite, those two things, in my opinion, the exact opposite of Luciano Spalletti. I've always likened him to the crazy aunt that everyone has. Yeah, the one who is into like astrology. He's like Janice from The Sopranos, into Reiki, into astrology, sort of like this new age sort of stuff. Kind of, obviously, when you're younger, really fun to be around the one who will let you get away with some things. It's fun to have that guy. Yeah. I can be around someone like that. Love that. But you know, in certain instances, though, you need that maturity. You need that presence that you can rely upon. Which, I mean, this is a guy who, and no disrespect to him, but when he's not doing football, he's out on his vineyard chasing ducks around, which, again, if more power to anybody who enjoys to do that in their spare time. But this guy is not the balanced figure, in my opinion, when it comes to international football that will allow you or give to you success. Like somebody who has that, even though he does complain and moan and whine too much, is Conte. I mean, you mentioned some of the things we all remember what he did in that Euro of 2016. I mean, guys, in all other instances, forget the Italian national team. I mean, some of them may be in Serie B.
No, some of them finished in China. Some of them disappeared off of football. Simone Zaza is unemployed. You know, Pelé went to China right after. Eder is in Brazil, I don't know, smuggling drugs. So, what? Giaccherini.
He's not still playing. Be serious. There's no way he still plays. What?
Giaccherini was what? He went to Napoli right after and probably made like two appearances for them and then retired from the sport. So that was. But the cohesion of the team and also the solidity at the back, Conte's understanding of what a tournament needs, is kind of the same thing that we saw. Conte was a leader. Roberto Mancini and the staff that he picked, they were friends. And they understood that because you had Gianluca Vialli, you had Daniele De Rossi, guys who knew how to be close to the team, how to inspire them. I don't understand what went wrong with Spalletti. I don't know what the hell went into his head when he even accepted this, because I just don't see how you go from winning the Scudetto with Napoli, a process that took you quite a bit of time, that you know fully well did not come easy, and then try to replicate that with Italy on the basis of, yeah, let's see, let's have these guys play 4-3-3, even though... I mean, think about it.
Yes. All of them play three at the back, sis.
Three. All of them play at three at the back. Federico Chiesa, yes. Di Marco, Bastoni, Gianluca Mancini, Pellegrini.
Pellegrini is a left winger.
I mean, come on. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's the thing, is there was so much misplaced confidence. For some reason, for some unknown reason, it felt like we were watching an Italy that has just won the Euro, but it's been 3 years. It felt like they owned the place without actually having the play, the football to back it up, to back this false sense of confidence. For some reason, every time they walked on the pitch in these four games that they played in the Euro, you felt like you were watching a team so assured of itself, so assured of its individual qualities, that it forgot to be a team. And that's, if there is one thing you cannot do in a tournament, it's that, to not be a team. We've seen that backfire with Italy. We've seen that help other teams, such as Portugal in 2016, such as Georgia now, who have been playing out of their minds because they've been a team. So, or Spain, who have unbelievable quality, sure, but there is a cohesion about them that wasn't there in previous years. Finally, Spain, finally they're back to playing like a team, even though they have the likes of Dani Carvajal, they have Morata, these experienced veterans who've been there for years. They play fresh. They play like a team that understands each other. Where was this from Italy?
Yeah, it is very confusing. They say he's going to remain. They have to support him, the usual nonsense. But trying to fight against it, it seems like a losing battle. All we can do is complain, as we always do. But let's move on. The Roma stuff now. I can't believe we spent almost half an hour between Italian bureaucracy and the Italian national team. That is far too much. Oof. Okay. Transfer market stuff. I'm going to throw onto the screen now. And for those of you listening, it is just, it's just sort of a reminder as to how, when we talk about, when people say profit and loss, when it comes to the transfer market, it always seems to be, the football manager or the FIFA 24 equation of it is, you know, 5 years ago or 3 years ago or three seasons ago, you paid 10 million for a player. Now you're selling him for nine. So you lost 1 million. No, it's not how it works. So we're going to throw it up on the screen now as just a very simple guide or a simple reminder as to what we mean when we say plus valenza, capital gain, minus valenza, capital loss. Easy to remember, just the transfer fee, then you divide it over the contract length. And when we talk about amortization, what they amortize over on an annual basis, these are the things we are talking about. So in case in a couple of weeks from here, you hear us speaking of a certain transfer and analyzing it from an amortization point of view, we will keep this. We'll use this image a few times throughout the summer as a reminder, but just to keep everyone on the same pages as when it comes to the capital gains, capital loss, I don't want anybody to be lost when we use these words and when we use plus valenza. But having said that, Andy, let's start with the one that is a very weird story, because A, nobody would have ever envisioned Roma being linked with this player to begin with, and B, you have a very distinct split between, well, I should just say one person when it comes to this story, which is Gianluca Di Marzio, when it comes to Varane and his insistence that Roma are not just interested, but they are engaged in negotiation with him. They want to bring him to the club. And then you have Roma, which they have said the exact same thing to me. You have Roma. You also have good friend Fabrizio Romano. And I think a couple of other outlets have said the exact same thing. But everybody's just getting it from Roma, which, again, they have said the exact same thing to everybody. They are saying, no. He does not have the profile. He does not fit the approach we are trying to take in the market, which you would think is the right path. Like, if you were in the fork of the road, if you had to believe one of these two paths, Andy, either what Roma is telling to us or what Di Marzio is saying. And by the way, he has been very staunch in this, which I find very interesting, that he hasn't wavered in his belief on this. So something has to give. I always warn people that I put very little into what anybody, whether it be club, player, manager, what they say publicly. It means nothing. However, it's not as if I put the exact quotation of the media manager of Roma, like I published it onto the website. They just said, no, we're not interested. So it's not as if this was an on or versus off the record sort of issue. But it is interesting, because one storyline similar to this that I remember involving Di Marzio was when Pep, when he was going, I believe he was the one who broke Pep going to Bayern after he had left Barcelona. And he was one of the earliest to say that he is going to the German side. That's what's going to happen. And even when people said, no, that's not going to happen, Di Marzio remained staunch, and it obviously ended up being the case. So part of me says, well, he's done it before, so perhaps everyone will have egg on their face. But Andy, I mean, if we were going by just what we believe here and what Roma are saying to us, what Daniele De Rossi has been saying,
right? It doesn't fit. Just like, in my opinion, even though there is some confirmation about that with Mats Hummels, although there hasn't been any updates so far about that, I think these stories go against Roma's entire philosophy this summer. Roma are even unlikely to continue with Diego Llorente, for example, because the guy is nearing 30, and Roma just don't feel like investing, what, 5 million, which is what Leeds United are asking for Llorente for it to become a permanent deal. Roma don't find that interesting right now. Even though some months ago they would have probably gone for it. And now with Gisolfi in charge, clearly there have been some discussions ongoing, because you can see how the objectives have shifted. You know, how exactly at the beginning of the transfer, at the end of the season, we heard a lot about, for example, Roma prioritizing Diego Llorente's stay. Well, that's off the agenda right now. We saw Eduardo Bove going from being a mainstay, a player who Roma are willing to bet on in the future, to being a player that Roma would be open to selling, because the guy wants playing time. which he is unlikely to get on a regular basis from Daniele De Rossi, and Roma are like, okay, well, we're going to change our politics regarding this particular player. So Varane, in my opinion, just like Mats Hummels, does not fit the mold that that Roma are out there for right now. They don't want – Roma have a clear mission in slashing that massive wage bill. That's not going to happen if you get a guy like Varane. It's not going to happen if you get a guy like Hummels unless the player asks for a reduced salary on a one-year deal, which is unlikely when you deal with these free agents right now. They always want 2 years, and they will never go below, say, 3 million. Yeah. I do not think Roma want to replace someone like Chris Smalling, whom they're trying to replace, with a guy who earns exactly the same amount of money and is the same age, you know? So there is a lot of noise around Roma. I think with Gisolfi's arrival has mixed the cards for a lot of the members of the media, because a lot of these news stories are just pure speculation on stuff that was previously linked to Roma. And all of a sudden, there's all these players emerging from Ligue 1 just because Gisolfi comes from Ligue 1. And so apparently we're tracking basically every player from France. Even though we're tracking Enzo Lefebvre, who is supposedly close to Roma, that doesn't mean that we'll be signing the entirety of France with Gisolfi at the helm. So what's fascinating to me is exactly that there has been this drastic shift in focus. Roma went from targeting a certain profile of players to a completely different one. Right now, it seems like Roma want to prioritize players who are under 25 years of age, players who have a high potential, players who can be sold in the future and that you're not stuck with. Players who are not coming off a free agent situation like Houssem Aouar. I think that's a player, for example, whom Roma would not have signed in this particular transfer window, unlike they did a year ago, where it seemed like it was a no-brainer. I think a player like Aouar, someone who's a free agent and who hasn't played in a year, wouldn't have signed with Roma at this moment in time, because the tide has shifted and Roma are heading in a different direction. The direction is the famous word sustainability, and Enzo Lefebvre, I think, is the first addition of that philosophy. The Levante fullback, whom will be included in the Primavera, Buba Sangare, with the potential of including him in the first team soon, is also an example of that. A guy you pay a 1.5 million for a 16-year-old kid. Well, that means that you're making that the philosophy, the new philosophy of the club, right? That kind of investment.
Yeah. The names like Hummels, Varane, I just don't understand what you're clearly, by signing those two guys, if Roma were to move forward with those two, which I do not think they are going to do, it is such a mixed signal. It is as if you don't know which path you want to take, because then, you know, if you go that path, it's like, okay, well, you know, then why not try to bring back Romelu Lukaku? I mean, if this was the path you were going to take, where you're going to give, by the way, huge wages to those guys too. So then why is Lukaku out of the question? And that is something that, when it comes to this new approach they were going to take, everybody from De Rossi, now Gisolfi hasn't spoken, won't even speak to anybody off the record, by the way, another Thiago Pinto, which I can respect the game. Okay, fine. I was not buying into it, and I still don't. I mean, again, if this was the path you were going to take, you do bring back Llorente. You do try to find a deal with Chelsea for Romelu Lukaku, but that just does not square with some of the things we have been hearing from them. And by the way, why would you take that path if, well, we saw it did not exactly bear the best of fruit last season with a new sporting or technical director. with the first full season of Daniele De Rossi, I think it only makes sense to try this.
Try something new.
Try something new.
That's why it's been clear all along. Spinazzola is not going to stay. Rui Patricio not going to stay. Because there is that need. There is that need for something new, something that is in line with the person in charge. You cannot, you have to, it's kind of like that whole Italy situation. You have to model the team with regards to the coach. The coach, like Luciano Spalletti, who just throws his idea out there, ignoring the players that he has at his disposal, exactly what Roma do not want to do with De Rossi. They know they have to support him. Gisolfi knows that his task is, first off, to slash the wage bill, second of all, rejuvenate the squad, and third of all, get players who are functional with De Rossi's ideas. Because what we've learned from the Mourinho-Thiago Pinto experiment is that in order to respect financial fair play, some compromises had to be made, and those compromises were not in line with what the manager considered functional to his taste. That's why so many of the players that you got, in the end, they didn't work out under the Mourinho regime because they were not functional to his style of playing. That's why you bring in a guy like Leandro Paredes, who is completely ineffective under Jose Mourinho, but looks great under Daniele De Rossi, and you want more of that. And so, if people are getting stressed out that, hey, it's the 30th of June and we still haven't signed anybody, it's because you have to pick your targets and you have to pick them carefully. You don't want to make those mistakes that you made in the past. I mean, listen, Matias Vinha, Eldor Shomurodov were signed like that right after the gong. Rui Patricio was signed like that right after the gong. Does that mean that those deals worked out in the end? Well, for Patricio, it worked out for one season. For Matias Vinha and Eldor Shomurodov, it didn't. So what did you end up with in the long run? Nothing. So that's what Roma want to avoid. They want to make careful investments that then have a future, a concrete future at the club and beyond. And players who are functional to the manager who's sitting on the bench, not some idea of financial fair play. No, you are signing players who are compatible with what the manager wants. And that is the new philosophy. In my opinion, it's the right philosophy to have. It will be interesting to see how Roma shift their modus operandi under Gisolfi. But again, as always, I'm trying to bring in the glass half full perspective. It's exciting.
Yes. It's a new approach. It is exciting, something different. And again, let's just see what happens. We have underwhelmed in recent seasons. There's no reason to be down about it now or not have any confidence because, again, they didn't live up to it in previous seasons doing what we wanted. So, all right, we will leave it there. We will return in 1 week, and then the transfer market is on, so we will return to 2 episodes per week following that. So until next time, ciao.